Coming up on Tech News Today, T-Mobile is saved by Metro PCS. Yep, there's a merger. We'll talk about it. Also, Samsung calls the jury foreman from the Apple case a liar. And Twitter and Nielsen partnering up for what? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, October 3rd, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by the new Squarespace. Squarespace introduces a new content management system, making it faster and easier to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio, plus more than 50 new features, including mobile-responsive designs. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT10. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And, of course, Shannon Morse filling in today. Actor on vacation. Thanks for joining us,
Shannon.
Yeah,
anytime.
Good to have you along as well. Let's start off with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. As we expected, Deutsche Telekom has announced that its T-Mobile USA unit will merge with Metro PCS to form a new publicly traded T-Mobile US company. With Deutsche Telekom as the majority shareholder, the deal is expected to be approved and closed in early 2013.
The Wall Street Journal is the latest outlet to report Apple is releasing a smaller iPad. This is based on rumors from anonymous supplier sources that the tablet is already on the production line. Still reported to have that 7.85-inch display, and it's expected to be announced this month. But important to note, it hasn't yet.
Doesn't
exist yet.
Yeah. Samsung has moved to have the decision in the Apple-Samsung patent case tossed out of court. That's not surprising. Of course, they're going to try. Among their many reasons, though, the company says the jury foreman failed to disclose a lawsuit and his personal bankruptcy. Velvin Hogan served as jury foreman and had been sued by Seagate in 1993. Velvin says he was only asked to disclose lawsuits from the past 10 years, or he would have told him.
Since August 1st, sales of the Galaxy S3 have seen average weekly growth of 9%, and some spikes happened after the Apple lawsuit verdict and the iPhone 5 announcement, according to mobile app analytics firm Localytics. Sales of the S3 phones jumped 16% from August 21st through the 27th. That was a good week. On the 24th, a jury in California found Samsung guilty of patent infringement, awarding Apple more than $1 billion in damages. And of course, as Tom said, Samsung says, we don't like that verdict.
No, they don't like that.
We want it changed.
Get ready to unlock the door with your phone. Apogee has begun accepting pre-orders for its keyless lock, which uses text messaging or Wi-Fi or Bluetooth 4 or NFC to allow almost any phone to work with the device. Android and iOS apps also allow you to manage who can access the lock. The Lockatron, as it's called, will cost $149 and ships in March 2013 internationally.
Google is working on adding Street View images to the mobile web version of Google Maps as soon as this week. And that's not actually a rumor, by the way. Walt Mossberg over at All Things D says he's already tested it out and it works great. One more reason not to miss Google Maps too much on iOS 6. It's alive, it's well, and it's almost fully functional.
It's like Nixon. I don't know why I said that. If the idea... He's tanned, he's rested, he's ready. I guess it
why is the dead man laughing?
I don't know. If the idea of increased aerial density excites you, lean in close to this podcast. TDK claims they have realized 1.5 terabits per inch squared with magnetic head technology based on thermal assist recording using near-field light. Now, if that doesn't warm you up, this might. The company said it should be able to get 2 terabytes per platter into 3.5-inch drives. That means an easy 6 or more terabytes per drive coming soon.
While Nokia waits for Windows Phone to catch fire, not literally, of course, that just means sell a lot, it still needs to save some cash. Reuters reports Nokia is considering selling its headquarters in Espoo, Finland. Before you fear for Nokia engineers compiling code in the streets, the company would likely lease the building back from whomever bought it.
Whew. Windows Phone Central followed up on a China Times report and now says that their sources also say Microsoft has their own Windows Phone hardware in the works. BGR also reports the same thing and notes it is a high-end phone and would not launch with the first wave of Windows Phone 8 handsets, and it might just be a contingency plan. Who knows?
Skype wants to give you British and Irish TNT viewers free Wi-Fi.
Woo.
In a partnership with wireless broadband specialist Ycoms called Free Skype Wi-Fi, retailers, hotels, and businesses would receive a dedicated router and Skype hotspot service. Customers can log on with their Skype ID using Skype Wi-Fi application.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by the new Squarespace.com. Faster and easier than ever for you to create a high-quality website. You got a blog you want to do. You got an online portfolio you want to show off your photographs. Squarespace has launched a new content management system called Squarespace 6 that is perfect for you. While Squarespace is still focused on ease of use, beautiful design, and giving you the best customer support, the new Squarespace is an entirely new product, different code base, uses the latest web technologies, HTML5, CSS3, JavaScript, JSON. It's fast, it's flexible, and it gives your website users the best mobile experience. Squarespace developed brand new templates that with mobile-ready responsive designs, meaning your site automatically restructures to look great on any smartphone, tablet, or computer. In fact, when you add an image to the site, they make 7 different versions for you, so it's correctly sized to the screen people are looking at when they look at your website. The new Squarespace, faster and easier than ever. Beautiful templates, 100% drag-and-drop functionality for all customizations tools. You got to go try out their new page builder tool. If you tried Squarespace out a long time ago, you're going to be blown away at how much easier they've been able to make it an already good product. So go check it out, squarespace.com. You don't have to do anything to sign up other than give a name. No credit card required, nothing. It's easy to give it a shot. And if you do like it, by all means, use this offer code TNT10 with our compliments and get 10% off your first month on new accounts. Or if you pay for a year at once, you get 10% off the entire year. In fact, with a year, they give you a free domain name. So no credit card needed. Go try it out. And remember that offer code if you do decide to keep it, TNT10. And let Squarespace know if you're already a subscriber that you appreciate their subscription and you appreciate their sponsorship of Tech News Today. Go give it a shot, though. Shannon Morse, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
How are things going over there at the Hack 5?
Pretty good. We just got back from a convention called DerbyCon over in Louisville,
Kentucky. Lots of people wearing hats.
Oh, yeah. Lots of hats, lots of horse races, all sorts of good times. And it was great. Grits, sweet tea, and
nice.
Lots of hacking.
And hacking,
going on.
Of course.
Of course,
yeah,
of
obviously.
Course.
Let's start off talking about that Deutsche Telekom Metro PCS merger. It's something that's called a reverse merger, which essentially means that the acquired company eats the company that's buying it. Somehow. Metro PCS is a publicly traded company. So what's happening is Deutsche Telekom is giving T-Mobile to Metro PCS in exchange for most of the shares of the new company going to Deutsche Telekom. They'll hold 74% of the shares. Now, Deutsche Telekom could slowly sell off that stake over time to raise some money and eventually, if they wanted to, spin the company out on its own. They've been trying to figure out how to divest themselves of the U.S. business for a long time, although they said today that they're committed to the U.S. market, so they may be still evaluating their options there. They did try to sell T-Mobile to AT&T, don't forget. That was not approved by the U.S. regulatory agencies, so they've been looking for another way to figure out how to save T-Mobile. They claim the new company will have 42 million subs combined. I think there's something like 9 to 10 million Metro PCS subscribers there. Still less than half of what Verizon or AT&T has, but it does give T-Mobile a bunch of spectrum, and they need that spectrum. Metro PCS is using it for CDMA, but if they can wean the Metro PCS people off CDMA, they could use that spectrum for rolling out LTE. And it does block Sprint from buying Metro PCS, which they had been looking at doing. They say by the end of 2015, they expect to shut down the existing Metro PCS network after transitioning all the customers. But meanwhile, right now you can go, or not right now, as soon as this thing is done in 2013, you'll be able as a Metro PCS customer to get more phones because you can use the GSM network that T-Mobile has.
Does the T-Mobile name go away?
All the slides today just called it NewCo, which is kind of typical in merger acquisitions when they
that's
when
what
they're,
I'm
they're
a
not
little
committing
unclear about.
To a new name, so no, they haven't decided. My guess is yeah, they'll probably call the new company T-Mobile.
Yeah, actually, there's an update on the post that says the new company will operate as T-Mobile.
Okay, good.
Not
so
Metro PCS.
They did right. State that. Who says that? What's the attribution on that? I'm sorry.
We've now received confirmation that the companies have signed a definitive agreement to combine.
Which source? I'm sorry.
I'm
no.
Looking.
What page?
Oh, sorry. That's the Verge article.
The Verge.
That we were learning.
Yeah, that's what I was looking.
Sorry.
Who said that?
I was
that?
Like, who was the source from that? I don't know, but it was on the Verge article.
So the Verge must have gotten confirmation from
yes.
Deutsche Telekom.
There you go.
I mean, I
that makes sense to me. I mean, not that the naming is the most important part of this, but I would say that T-Mobile probably has better brand recognition or at least brand loyalty than MetroPCS at this point. But it is interesting that MetroPCS is the publicly traded company, and that's the one that, even though it's really technically swallowing up T-Mobile, it's the one that's going to go away as far as public.
Well, it depends on how you look at it.
Goes.
I mean, basically, MetroPCS is getting T-Mobile and then changing their name to T-Mobile.
Yeah.
Sort of.
How long has MetroPCS been around, by chance? Does anybody know that? Because before I moved here 2 years ago, I had never heard of MetroPCS. I didn't even know what it was.
Well, they don't operate in every single market. So they have been around for a while.
Not Midwest, not the East Coast, because I had never heard of it. So I think this is a great move for T-Mobile and MetroPCS. It adds that extra spectrum, and it gives me a chance to look at T-Mobile seriously and consider them for a new carrier.
They're from Texas, by the way.
Founded in 1994.
1994 as General Wireless and changed their name to MetroPCS in 2008.
There we go.
So, yeah, I mean, they don't operate in every market. In fact, it was one of these stories had a map that showed the coverage overlap, which will increase for T-Mobile, but really not by that much. T-Mobile was kind of operating in every one of those markets. It's just that they will now have extra spectrum in those markets where MetroPCS existed. The new company will be run by T-Mobile's chief executive, John Laguerre, which is why I was guessing that they'd be called T-Mobile. But the CFO for MetroPCS is sticking on it around to run the finances.
Well, even with their combined 42 million subscribers, which they say that they'll have together, still being less than half of what Verizon or AT&T have, at least puts it on, it's not an even playing field. It's not a level playing field, but it certainly is closer than either of these companies could hope to do on their own.
It's very telling that Deutsche Telekom is doing the reverse merger, to get back to that, because it means they really don't have faith in T-Mobile. Mm. If they did, they would have bought MetroPCS, added it to their T-Mobile division, and brought it private. But instead, they're saying, we're not sure. We kind of wanted to get out of this business because we wanted to sell it to AT&T. So we do this, and then we can slowly draw cash out of it by selling off the stock and have the option to bring it in at any time and buy everybody else out or spin it off altogether. It does mean that we have a fourth major choice in the U.S., at least for a while longer.
Yeah, we do.
So that's...
And give Sprint something to be angry about all over again.
Exactly. Dan Hess is probably throwing a fit right now. Let's talk about that imaginary iPad Mini.
So this is why we're talking about it again, is often these rumors start trickling out. We've talked about the mythical iPad Mini for months and months and months. But sometimes when certain sources start leaking to publications like the Wall Street Journal, it starts feeling a little bit more real or realer than ever. The Wall Street Journal does have sources. They say that our executives at component makers that say Apple has started mass production on a new tablet computer that's smaller than the current iPad. Both LG and Taiwan's AU Optronics have begun production on LCD screens for the device last month, according to these sources. But the rumors of what it will look like and how it will differ from the iPad, that's not really anything new. We're still hearing a 7.85-inch liquid crystal display, which will have a lower res than the Retina iPad. It'll also be smaller overall and more competitively priced. We don't know that for sure, but you just have to assume, or else Apple would go as full res as possible to compete with the new Kindles, the Nexus 7, other smaller form factors for tablets. The Verge reminds us that the Japanese blog Mako Takara on Monday said that production of an iPad mini had begun in a Foxconn plant in Brazil. Although the Wall Street Journal's information is not from any component maker in Brazil. That's over the Asian component makers, of course, LG and Taiwan being in that category. So I don't know. We're not hearing really anything new. We're just hearing more sources saying the same thing.
There was the rumor kicking around earlier this week. We didn't talk about that invites would go out October 12th. So we might find out next week. Usually this is this is why I was okay saying, let's go ahead and talk about it. When the Wall Street Journal says they have supplier sources that are making components, it usually ends up being true.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean it will end up being true, but it's your percentage chance goes up above 90%.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that some of the other technology blog sources that have been talking about this a lot longer don't have their own clout. It's just you get to the point where it seems like it's going to happen. Now the question is when? When do we get these invites? We, none of us are going to get them, but when do the invites go out?
I mean, if Apple knows anything, of course they will invite me to this.
Right, exactly.
They don't know.
How else are they going to sell any iPad minis?
Of course. When I first read this Washington Post article, I was like, oh, so this sounds like a real thing. And I actually had to ask you guys, you know, is this still a rumor? Is this really going on? Because it sounds so serious. But and then they go on and they're like, okay, yeah, it's still a rumor. But there's a lot of possibilities. There should be a lot of invites coming out like next week. So we'll see. I think this is a really good move for Apple. It'll bring in a much larger consumer market for their tablets. Because
how much larger do they need?
I know, right? They already have everybody on the iPhone.
Well,
so
they're what,
do they
60%
need,
of tablet sales?
Yeah,
as,
and I guess that's
of,
been going down.
As of now, so they, you know, 60% isn't good enough.
Right. That's
they
not 100%.
Get to 75,
right. 100%. If it's not 100%, there's room to grow.
You know what's cooler than 60%?
61%. 60,
yes, or more.
You're feeling.
You thought the Samsung Apple patent case was done, didn't you? Yeah.
Well, it's never not, make nothing, that mistake.
No case is ever
it's never,
done.
It's never done.
Samsung wants the verdict tossed. Now, that's not news in and of itself. Like, this is going to happen in pretty much every case. If they have any chance of getting a verdict tossed, a lawyer will file for that. That would be irresponsible not to. What's interesting about it is that Foreman Velvin Hogan did a lot of interviews after the case was done, and he talked a lot about his experience with patents and what he was telling the other jurors. Some people felt that maybe what he said was inappropriate, and Samsung is playing that line. They're saying he misled the juror, that his public statements after the verdict suggested he failed to answer the court's questions truthfully, that he was trying to secure a seat on the jury. As we mentioned in the news fuse, he did not disclose that he had been sued by Seagate, and Seagate has an ongoing relationship with Samsung after buying the hard drive business from Samsung. So there's also this thing about the lawyer who filed the complaint against Hogan regarding the Seagate case is married to an attorney who works for the firm that represented Samsung, which actually Hogan said, well, they should have known then, because if the attorney was married, then like, why did I need to tell him that? He also says, I answered all the court's questions truthfully. They said, have you had any lawsuits? Have you been engaged in any lawsuits in the past 10 years? The Seagate lawsuit was 1993. If they'd asked me to list all the lawsuits, of course I would have said it. So Samsung is arguing lots of causes for mistrial. Probably their best chance would be a reduction in damages. Mm-hmm. But do you think because Hogan went and talked to the press quite a bit more than jurors normally do, and kind of talked himself up about, you know, how he had experience because he owned a patent, he holds a patent, that maybe the judge might look unfavorably at him because of that?
Yeah, it sort of seems like you've always got those jury members who, after the whole thing's over, and they obviously spent a lot of time and energy working this out, and it's a huge case, and there's so much money involved, for somebody to kind of go like, you know, this happened, and I'm an expert in a few different ways, and this is why I kind of helped this whole thing propel forward. So there's a little bit of bravado that you see going on. I'm not singling out Hogan specifically. But all it does is draw attention to the fact that, well, maybe you had some conflicts. You know, there's some gray areas here. I don't see how he helped himself.
Do you think he lied?
No. I mean, his whole thing of, hey, they asked me in the last 10 years. I mean, what should they say then? The last 20 years? I mean, at what point is it something where when you find out the facts afterwards, it's sort of like, hey, have you filed for bankruptcy in the last 7 years? You know, it's like,
having just
you
done
don't
jury duty on Monday, most people will try their best to volunteer information that will get them off the jury.
Right.
Right. But it is the lawyer's job to extract that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was basically following the rules that they asked him to do last 10 years. He gave the last 10 years. So he didn't necessarily have to say anything. But the fact that he was going out and doing all these interviews and basically explaining to the press afterwards, it just sounds like he was trying to get a lot more attention than what's needed after this has already been ended.
Maybe he wants a book deal, too.
Mm-hmm. A book deal.
That's what somebody in the chat room said.
Well, he'd probably get one.
Yeah.
I don't think that's very far-fetched, actually.
You know, I got a deal. I'm going to get, I'm not, you know, I'm talking three figures here, but Gazelle. They just opened the box for my iPhone.
basically retire.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about it. This episode, of course, brought to you by Gazelle. If you want a new iPhone or any other gadget, before you get the new one, make sure you sell your old phone to Gazelle for cash. Cash you can use to upgrade. Gazelle's simple and fast, and you can keep the phone you're selling until you get the new phone. All you do is you go to Gazelle. That's GAZELLE.com. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones for cash. So just be honest about it. You'll still get a quote. Get a risk-free offer of your gadget. Lock it in for 30 days. Once you get your new phone, you ship your old one to Gazelle. They'll pay for the shipping, and you'll get paid fast by check or by PayPal. Go to Gazelle.com. Get an offer for your iPhone. Do it today because your iPhone's not going to get more valuable, especially right now with everybody buying iPhone 5s like crazy. It may lose value every day you wait. So get paid in cash. Do it hassle-free. If you've been putting off selling because you think it's a hassle, it's not. Go to Gazelle.com. Try it out. Payment is fast. You'll get it within a few days of the item being received, and it's risk-free. Go lock it in for 30 days. Find out what your iPhone is worth at Gazelle.com, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Onward into the news, and it's a gaggle of Google stuff.
Yeah, I like that, actually. I wish I would have thought of that. Yeah, it's kind of a Google News roundup. We mentioned in the News Fuse that Street View images are coming to the mobile version of Google Maps, which is what, at least until we get an official Google Maps app for iOS, is what you are stuck with if you want to keep using Google Maps and you're running iOS 6. Walt Mossberg says he's played with it. Google allowed him to. It's a real thing. He says it's great. You know, you pan around with a finger. It seems to work really well. So I'm very excited about that. Street View is by far the thing I miss most about my reduced options with Apple Maps and iOS 6.
I haven't run into that yet, but I have used it in the past just when I'm out of town.
Yeah.
To look for markers and
stuff. You want to get a sense of a block. Like, what's this block like if I was actually walking down it, type of a thing?
Although Brian Ibbett was saying on the morning stream this morning that he used the Apple Maps 3D view to notice that what it said was an office supply store was not an office supply store, but a dealer's school.
Oh, really?
So it kind of saved him from its own error, but...
Well,
he sort of used 3D
contradicting
Apple
itself.
For the Street View aspect.
And you have some other options. Live Street View is an app I talked about on i5 recently, but it will be nice to get Google's own Street View images as functional in Safari in the browser. Also, Google has announced on its Chromium blog that it has added Peer Connection API to the latest beta of Chrome. This allows third-party developers to build video chat apps that wouldn't require plugins. So natively, it would provide Google Hangouts, video chats in Chrome, for example, along with another API. This is basically Google going a step closer to WebRTC. That's a standard for video, audio, and data on the web that has some backing. Microsoft announced that it was going to publicly join the WebRTC camp back in August, although they have a different approach than Google. So at least those two companies, because, you know, it is Microsoft and Google and they have a lot of sway, are going to have to come to some agreements on how they're going to roll this out.
To make it standard. Make the standard
exactly.
Standard.
Exactly. That's the whole thing, is that it's far from being a standard right now, but it's better, as far as standards go, than what Google is doing at this point.
Because I hate that download, the Google Hangout download.
It's a proprietary plugin that you need for Google Plus Hangouts, and WebRTC is just a standard solution that would require, that would run rather in a variety of browsers. You would never need plugins. And then you figure, okay, well, not only would Google Hangouts get a boost there, but a lot of video chat, a lot of messaging services would be able to talk to each other based on the standard. So that's awesome.
Yes, I completely agree with you. I am not a fan of any time I have to download anything on my PC at home. Mm-hmm. I'm like coupon printer things and the Google Hangout thing, like any of that junk. It just feels like spam to me. So the fact that they can build this into a browser is going to be excellent, and I can't wait to use it.
Well, I'm glad. That makes two of us, Tom. You excited?
Yeah, well, this might make it easier to use on Linux, too.
That's the whole idea. Love those standards. Also, Google has some good news for Google Apps users. Google Apps for business, education, and government customers can now call and email the company with their questions about Chrome. Google sometimes has been accused of not being available when you have customer support questions and you're paying Google for services that your company depends on. So just one
It's one
more
thing
reason.
To not be able to get an answer as a YouTube or a Gmail user, but then when you're a paying user,
yeah.
you really need to.
Oh, we use Google Apps at Twit.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
If we run into an issue that affects 20-plus people, we got to get a hold of somebody. So sounds like Google is taking that a little bit more seriously as well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
On to the Lockatron. Lockatron, not a Decepticon, but a way to do keyless entry easily on your door. It fits over your existing deadbolt. They say it's even great for renters because you just pop it off when you're done. So it's easy install, easy removal. It's kind of like the Nest thermometer. Really, a lot of these sorts of home automation things becoming simple and easy to use. Connects, as we mentioned in the news feed, by Bluetooth 4, NFC, or Wi-Fi. You can even do text messages. So Apogee's saying it works on every smartphone or every phone. Which you never want to say every phone, but I'd say it probably does work on almost every phone. They have an Android and iOS app. You can unlock by text message. If you're on the iPhone 4S or the iPhone 5, the Bluetooth allows you to turn on something called Sense that will just unlock the door when you get close to it. So as soon as it senses your phone is there, it'll unlock for you. And the app can allow you to authorize different people. You can authorize phones. It'll send you an alert. Let's say your child has come home and let themselves in the house. You'll get an alert that says, hey, Bobby's home now. The door was unlocked by his phone.
Or let's hope it's Bobby.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. Apogee ready to take pre-orders for the $149 Lockatron box. And like I said, ships internationally in March. When Shannon saw this story earlier today, she's like, this is a horrible idea. And so I challenged her. I'm like, is it more horrible than a key and a regular lock? Because I know the immediate reaction is like, oh, great, somebody's going to hack into my lockbox and get into my house.
Yeah, I saw the Bluetooth and I saw the NFC and I was like, oh, God, I heard about the NFC hacks this weekend. And then I go into the lockpicking village and there's people over there playing with bumps and they're like breaking things open, sitting at this table. And they're just like, done, all done, keys unlocked. So there's no exact fix for locks in any sense of the word. There's no perfect fix for it, but I really hope that Lockatron is looking into all the different errors that could come up and all the different security flaws and making sure that they cover these. Maybe they could use like two-factor authentication, or what if you're inside the house? If you walk by the door, is it going to unlock in the middle of the night? Like what's I don't want my door unlocking in the middle of the night because my phone's sitting near the door or something like that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions that I have about this, and I want to see more. I want to play with it. I don't want to put it on my front door.
It's also my first reaction is, well, hold on a second. I mean, if I lose my house keys, right, you know, or somebody takes them from me, mm-hmm. unless for some reason they know me, they don't actually know where those keys go.
Yeah.
So it's like, I probably want to change the keys, but there's not, you know, some sort of like identification about who I am as a person on those keys. Somebody steals my phone and maybe I'm in the middle of something and they know enough about getting through, you know, some sort of a passcode for Lockatron, then they're probably going to have a much easier time finding personal information about me, whether it's my home address.
They have a system to deauthorize a phone if you lose it. So,
sure.
So you can jump into that, but yeah.
I mean, how long do I have? You know, it's like I've had to run and deauthorize that thing, you know, because if they're ahead of me and they get into the house, it's just I'm super paranoid.
How often
about
is that going to happen?
No. Not often, but once is enough.
Right, but it's I think what Shannon was just saying though points out that it's easier for someone to actually break into a mechanical mm-hmm. lock mm-hmm. than to try to steal your phone and raid you to your house.
But it's possible, and therefore I am frightened.
Well, but that's what security is all about, is reducing the possibilities, because you'll never get 100% security.
Yes, no, you're right.
So, and Lockatron is not the first company to provide keyless entry either, but what's attractive about this is it's cheap and easy. So if it's cheap and easy and it becomes more widespread, then you have more people trying to figure out how to hack into it,
yep.
and that becomes an issue. But I actually feel like there are a lot more criminals out there right now who know how to pick a normal lock than would know how to get into this. So this might give you a percentage bump up for a while, and it provides all of these conveniences. I would be less worried about the security, although I would be very worried about the security, but I'd be more worried about bugs, where I walk up with my phone and it's like, nope, not unlocking.
You can't get in.
No, but I have the phone right here. And it's like, not communicating.
I'll let you guys know how it goes after I get back from DEF CON next year. And somebody actually does a talk on the Lockatron.
How many hacks there are. That's a good point. All right. Let's finish up with Twitter getting into the ratings game with Nielsen, Sarah. What's going on here? This isn't about television ratings, though. It's about brand ratings.
No, it's about anybody who's familiar with television ratings will say, well, but Nielsen isn't really a good way to figure out who's actually watching what. But that's what we have right now, so that's what the advertisers look at, and it's just the way that it's always been. Twitter knows that that its network is sometimes a very good indicator for not only what people are watching, but what's resonating with people. You know, something happens in a football game with a temporary ref, Twitter goes insane, for example, you know, or some political issue. What Twitter has announced they're doing today is they've got a new collaboration effort with Nielsen, and it's a tool for advertising partners on Twitter to measure their brand impact. Now, you might go, oh, God, brand impact. And that's actually kind of what I did, too.
There's a lot of buzzwords in this post.
Yeah, there really is. But the idea is that, okay, if I am Coca-Cola, and I'm just using that as an example, Twitter didn't use any brand as an example, and I'm trying to figure out if a certain commercial is getting a lot of buzz, which would indicate that a lot of people were watching that particular episode of X Factor, you know, at 8 p.m. type of a thing. I can now offer a brand survey saying, hey, do you like this Coke or do you whatever. It could be, you know, yes, no, I don't know type of a thing. A survey. Everyone knows how surveys work.
Great. That's exactly what I've been wanting on Twitter is a survey.
And it will show up the way that a promoted tweet would show up at the top of your timeline. And this would be a native experience, so not something that you can collapse, unless, of course, you're using a third-party client like I am, and then you wouldn't see it at all, which is why Twitter wants to shut down Tweetbot. Yeah, I hate this. I hate this idea. Who likes surveys?
Well, because that's the thing, right? Promoted tweets work for me. People were like, oh, I don't know about promoted tweets, but they work because they feel natural. They don't stick out. I almost sometimes don't notice that they're promoted tweets when they do show up, and they show up rarely. So they slip right in, which is exactly what advertising should do. It should give you something that you would want without being obtrusive. And Twitter's been very good at that up until now. But the idea in this example where they show like, hey, would you like to take a survey about this? That just looks like spam. It like makes the spam light up in my brain when I look at it. And that's annoying.
And it's not like a, hey, figure out your personality, do some multiple choice quizzy and you know, the sort of thing that's kind of a fun game. This is just marketing stuff. So once you even take one survey, you'd be like, oh, this is, I don't know, it's something that Coca-Cola on Twitter doing. I just don't see anyone, even if they're sort of fooled into trying it once, are going to be, you know, these survey people who engage every time they're offered to take a survey.
What worries me is that there are so many of these things that exist in email spam because people do respond to them in just a large enough amount to make it worth it that they'll say it's a success.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm not happy about this at all. Anytime I see it, survey of any kind, I'm like, oh wow, I probably would have, you know, clicked on that when I was like 12 and I was interested in what Harry Potter character I am or something like that. But any kind of advertising on Twitter, the promoted tweets are okay. I never notice those. I really don't, because, you know, they fly through so quickly. So, you know, it just feels like a regular tweet. But something that I have to click on, I'm like, no, no thanks. No thank you, Twitter.
We've selected a small group of users for a brief survey, answer a few questions, and have your opinions count! Analytics.twitter.com.
The thing is that I don't think it's a bad idea to try to broaden how advertisers measure who's watching what.
Sure.
I think that that is a good idea overall. It's just this implementation of the idea seems really lame.
It's going to show up in a way that I can't avoid. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll show up and I'll be like, oh, you know what? Now that I'm seeing it doesn't bother me. But it sounds like something that will bug the crap out of me.
Surveys? Yeah. I just wouldn't have thought surveys would be part of my Twitter
Survey
experience.
Says no.
No.
Don't do it. Let's move on to the randomizer. Now, I know, Sarah, you like to tell a story about how I'm not impressed by quadcopters.
It's true, yes. At CES, Tom Merritt likes to say, hey, I was here last year, too, and it's just doing the same thing.
There they are again. They're hovering.
I don't get it.
Hovering over my shoulder.
Same old same.
But this is pretty cool. Quadcopters playing catch. The ETH Zurich quadcopter folks, according to Cory Doctorow on Boing Boing, have added a video of cooperative autonomous quadcopters throwing a ball to themselves. So there's three of them. They tighten the net to toss the ball up in the air. Then they scan to find out where it's going, and
oh
they move
goodness.
To catch it.
That's so cute. It's adorable.
That is pretty awesome.
Quadcopters.
In fact, if you click forward to 50 seconds, Jason, they actually, it's more impressive in the video there. And those of you on the audio podcast can go do this. They throw it across the room and then go chase it and catch it.
Wow.
You know what this is going to be? This is going to be the next, like, carnival thing. You know how right now, like, you'll have, like, a kid who gets, like, you know, and they'll spin you and you're, you know, sort of, like, suspended with these...
Have quadcopters throw you in the air.
Yeah. It's like, get, you know, like, how far do you want to be thrown if you're a real daredevil?
No, the quadcopter is perfectly safe, ma'am. Your son will not be harmed.
Right. Well, there'll be a net under kid in case the quadcopter is a little off. But that's, like, the fun part of it.
Yeah. We have a quadcopter in our office, and the thing is terribly hard to fly anywhere. It runs into everything because we don't know how to fly it.
Well, you need to let it learn to fly itself.
Yeah, right. This would be really cool.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
I love the perspective of the ball that's being thrown around. That's
the video. Be sure to watch it all the way through. You get a cool perspective there. Let's see what's on the calendar.
In Japan, the black PlayStation 3 Slim systems will go on sale tomorrow, October 4th.
I was going to make a slim joke, but then I was about to say sayonara slim, which would be goodbye and not right.
And
konnichiwa, Slim.
Yeah, konnichiwa.
Yeah, thank you.
Samsung is teasing the Galaxy S3 Mini for October 11th.
Well,
Do you believe this rumor?
They sent out a German invite for a thing on October 11th. And some heavy parsing.
So gross.
Suspects Kon Kleinsein that it will be eine kleine Samsung Galaxy S3.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, that's next week, right? And the European, I'm sorry, not the European Union.
Everything everywhere. EE.
When I say EE,
sometimes
funny,
I actually,
think EU.
EU, EC,
EE. Yeah, everything everywhere is launching the first UK-based 4G service on October 30th. I know that's going to make a lot of you UK-based TNT viewers and listeners extremely happy.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got a voicemail today from Brian on why he reads news from the web and not from an app, related to that story we did yesterday.
Hey, TNT crew, this is Brian over in Clawson, Michigan, giving a call, listening to the show today, and I wanted to comment on why people are reading stories now on the web compared to an app. The reason I do, and I'm an Android user, is because I get all my news from Twitter. All my newspapers, all my magazines, everything I follow, I get the links from there, I click it, it takes me to the browser automatically, and it won't take me to the app automatically. Love the show, thanks a lot.
Kind of why I like Flipboard.
Yeah.
You know? So that's how I do a lot of news reading myself. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I use apps more often because I do not get my news from Twitter because apparently I follow the wrong people. I mean, I do get some news from Twitter, but I don't rely on it. I don't look at Twitter as my news source because there's lots of things that happen that aren't in my Twitter feed.
Yeah, you know, the way I use it is with List. So it's not that I'm following people in my mainstream, but I have an Android List, for example, and it's got all of the news sources. Android
but aren't
Central,
those also
CNET.
In your mainstream?
No, I don't have those in my mainstream.
He doesn't follow them.
I don't follow them. I just add them to my curated Android list, and I have that as a separate
Wait,
stream.
If you...
You don't have to follow an account to have them in a list. That's how you keep your following number unbloated,
Tom
Merritt.
That's what I've been doing wrong. You know what? And here's the thing. I tried on the official Twitter app to create a tech list one time, and it kept failing. Like, every time I'd save it, and then I'd go back, it'd be empty.
You should try again.
You're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I've been doing it wrong
this
whole time.
This one time on
Revelation.
Twitter, I tried to make a tech list.
I'm just Twitter dumb. That's what this has been about.
But it ends up being a really good way to follow breaking news because you've got that separate stream, it's always showing
and
you the
Tweetbot
latest.
Tweetbot lets you go into your lists and I get it now. Actually, anyway, Brian, good point that it's different ways of consumption. If you are in the web, so to speak, because that's what Twitter does. It links to the web. Then you're going to keep reading your news on the web.
Got an email from Kyle in South Korea who says, it's easy for normal customers to say something like, oh, I can just go to the Google Maps website or download some other app. Why are people complaining about maps? But did they realize that it's a nightmare for developers? Every app that uses the embedded map is now screwed.
First example, a student develops an app for gathering buddies using a map of a campus and then the drop a pin feature. Now that developer is screwed if the Iowa 6 map doesn't have detailed enough map for the campus. Another example, a restaurant suggestion app is unusable. You launch Yelp on the iPad to see how messed up the new map actually is. I heard some of the small developers who relied on embeddable maps now feel suicidal because the map lacks detail for their countries and cities. This is bad, says Kyle. He's exaggerating, obviously, but just trying to prove a point that this is not just consumers mumbling and grumbling about, what are my maps options now? It's actually the developers that are the most harmed.
Right, and I think that's a reaction of a developer, an honest reaction to Tim Cook saying, yeah, we're really sorry, but here, use these other maps. Mm-hmm. And he's like, but that doesn't work for me.
Yeah,
I have to use the Apple map because that's the way your freaking API works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't even think of it from a developer's perspective. The whole time I was just sitting here with my iPhone going, oh, I guess I can get on the internets for the Google Maps, but the new map interface? Yeah, never even thought of the developers. Sorry, guys.
It really is a mapocalypse. got a couple more emails about the randomizer from Monday when I wasn't here, about the portable, the car with the mm-hmm. with the projector, the movie projector on it. Mink says, I don't know how janky the specific one you were talking about is, but as someone who helped a friend wire one into his car, having them built in is a huge convenience. Why was I doing this? Because as soon as I hit age 16, I wanted to get out of the house. And as it ends up, you want to watch a movie in your house, there are parents there. But if you watch them in your car, no parents. No brainer for anyone between the age of 13 and I have my own place. So back in the day, we hooked up an FM transmitter so we could get a group of cars together and had everyone watch and listen. There was also an abandoned grocery store. It never finished construction due to contract issues that had plenty of brick walls that weren't underground where we could go and watch movies. Maybe not a setup for everybody, but I can't imagine high school without it now.
Well, there you go. I actually think that sounds pretty fun.
That's a really cool story. Like we just hacked it together ourselves and found an abandoned grocery store
with a
bunch
drive-in.
Of brick walls. Yeah, made our own drive-in. That's really cool.
And now you can with a smart car.
Yep.
The special one anyway.
Yeah, there it is. That's the story from Monday. Also, Maurice in West Philly said that the car projector does have one practical use, tailgating. My brother was just asking me how we could use a power inverter projector plus laptop with TV tuner to watch football while tailgating. Problem solved.
You don't have to actually pack the plasma TV in the trunk anymore.
That's
right.
You
use the entire trunk for the food that you eat while you watch the projected image.
If it's nighttime.
That's a good idea.
That's awesome.
If it's dark.
Well,
if you're tailgating during the day, it's going to be kind of difficult.
You just bring a screen.
Prime time.
Yeah. Prime time games.
You'll have to pack in a screen.
Uh-huh.
Because most tailgating in parking lots is wide
open. Aren't going to happen against a white wall.
Yeah. But it could still work.
You could hack it together, a couple of PVC pipes, and just hang like a big white curtain or something.
Yeah.
You're good to go.
Way to go, West Philly. All right, well, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening and for submitting stories. We look at Reddit every day. When I get up in the morning, I look at, I look at the weather and BBC News, but then I also look at Tech Meme, Google News, and our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, to find out what's in the news. And what the subreddit tells me is, this is what a lot of folks in the audience think is important. And if it gets a lot of votes, we pay attention to it. So check it out. Tech News Today's Reddit is technewstoday.reddit.com. You can go there and submit stories, or you can just vote on the stories that are in there. In fact, voting on the stories is probably the best way to participate, because the more opinions we have, the better we can consider that information at technewstoday.reddit.com. Shannon Morse, pleasure as always.
Pleasure to be on. Thank you.
What's coming up on Hack 5?
I actually have a couple of really cool hacks. I'm going to hack the Nexus 7 to be able to be played with a PlayStation 3 controller via Bluetooth.
I have a Nexus 7 and a PlayStation 3 controller.
And I'm taking an MK802 mini PC that we sell at hackshop.com, and I'm hacking that and putting Linux on it instead of just Android.
Which distro?
Yay. Probably Ubuntu.
You're going to put Ubuntu?
Yep.
Nice. Yeah, that's what I'm using right now, actually.
And you can always follow me. I'm on Twitter. I'm Snubs. Not Snoobs.
Not Snoobs.
Not Snooky.
You could pronounce it that way.
Not Snickers.
Spelled S-N-U.
Snubs.
Snubs. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. I, as Akhtar, will be back tomorrow. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our electronic mail address is tnt@twit.tv, and you can give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Joining us tomorrow also, Martin Giles from The Economist. We'll see you then.